This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, I'm Sharad Kutan, with me, Melissa Idris and Ibrahim Sani, with the top business stories of the morning. We could start with the U.S. Federal Reserve and the fact that, as anticipated, they did raise interest rates and by a quantum that also was anticipated, right?
25 a quarter percentage point last night. But what was surprising, Sharad, what wasn't anticipated was the fact that the Fed forecasted 3 interest rate hikes next year. And that's far more quickly than what markets were pricing in or had initially projected. And it was interesting to note that the Fed cited a stronger U.S. economy. They cited lower unemployment, firming inflation, and a pickup in economic growth. So they're optimistic. In fact, they said it could be even more than 3 under the Trump regime.
So, okay. So one of the, the strands in this narrative is that if the Fed moves too quickly and too fast on federal, on interest rates, what happens is that the early pickup in the economy might be dampened, right? You don't want to dampen the resurgent economy by raising interest rates.
Exactly. You don't want, it just shows that the Fed is, I guess,
confident
in the strength of the recovery of the U.S. economy. But what was interesting also, in my conversation on Market Watch this morning with Stephen Innes, he said for him, the absence of any mention of data dependency from the Fed was surprising. Because if you note that all past Fed meetings, they always talk about being data dependent and watching the data points and the Fed's dot plots and all that. But the fact that there wasn't much talk on data dependency was quite a loud absence.
What does that signal? Is this an ideological move, or is it they just didn't feel they needed to say it?
Well, I think it signals confidence in the economy that they said, well, you know, we don't need to mitigate or manage expectations that we might change things because we have to be data dependent. They probably think the U.S. economy is strong enough.
This is the second time in 10 years that the Fed has raised rates. And it's also worth noting that the last time the Fed raised rates, a new Star Wars movie was out. So last night, Rogue One was out as well.
And almost to the day. The raise hikes, I think almost a year ago, December 16th.
Yeah.
2015. So what was interesting was that at that point in time, the U.S. economy was completely different. It was a decidedly different time for the U.S. economy. GDP growth was for the fourth quarter of 2015 was only 0.9%. Whereas you look at what it is now, a year in, you know, you've got the employment rate almost at full employment, 46% is the jobless rate at the moment.
Yeah. So falling back to what Stephen Innes argued just now, right? He says two things. Number one, watch emerging markets. And believe it or not, Malaysia is still an emerging market. So this is a country that we need to watch.
Yeah.
And number two, the dollar-yuan exchange. And it's important because between intra-country trade, balance of payments between two countries, China and US, are the highest in the world between any other two countries. And therefore, the dollar-yuan spread might be the most talked about exchange rate to watch. And this ties in very nicely with what we discussed yesterday with Dr. Suresh Ramanathan, who is a Forex specialist. He also argues that for emerging markets like Malaysia, we too trade high with these two countries, China and US. And, you know, ringgit-yuan, ringgit dollar, those are the two exchanges that we have to watch out. Same like any other emerging countries, like, you know, the Mexico peso or the Brazil lira. These are the two countries that they deal with most, right? China and US.
Italian lira.
No. Okay.
So coming back to the Federal Reserve, how does this play out for Donald Trump? I mean, he's going to be taking the presidency at the start of the year. He's got this big fiscal stimulus plan of, you know, $1 trillion.
Right.
Don't know how he's going to be funded at the moment, but and then he's got all these interest rates. Is that good for him and for his plans?
Well, I don't know whether it's good for him, but I think it's kind of this mutually eyeing each other from across the room. It's Donald Trump's watching the Fed's watching what Donald Trump's going to do. And it depends. If Donald Trump goes through with the fiscal stimulus and it does spur the economy, then the Fed might feel more confident in increasing the pace of rate hikes throughout the year. Whereas on vice versa, if, you know, the rate hike doesn't go as planned or Donald Trump, you know, U-turns on his words, on his promises, then perhaps we might even see slower rate hikes. You have to remember, at the start of 2016, we were talking 4 rate hikes. We're down to 1 this year. So maybe 3 rate hikes could be optimistic, or it could be on the low end of the spectrum. Who knows? What I do have to say is I'm also watching Donald Trump's Twitter feed. So far, nothing. He hasn't said anything about the decision to raise interest rates. But then again, you know, it was widely expected.
Right, so I guess people might be included in the fact that Donald Trump during on the campaign had made some harsh remarks about Janet Yellen. Janet Yellen is due to be replaced in 2018. Is that right?
Well, her term ends then, but
she could get an extension.
She's left the door open for that, so we'll have to see.
The question is, does Yellen want to
Does the Donald want Yellen to continue?
Yeah.
Okay, moving on. Japan has legalized for the first time the operation of casinos, where it's hoped that they will give, which they hope will give their moribund economy a much-needed shot in the arm.
Yeah, so this is going to pave the way for billions of dollars of potential investment. Now, it's important because it's been years of political wrangling trying to pass this bill to legalize casinos. So far, it's been received quite well. You've got Wynn Resorts, MGM Resorts, Las Vegas Sands, all looking to, eyeing this Japanese market.
Right.
But it's a good thing. You was talking about a shot in the arm for the Japanese economy. We're talking about a potential of $10 to $30 billion for the US, for Japan. And Japan needs it. Japan needs the GDP.
There has been a long argument on the stagnation of the Japanese economy, where we would like to deem it as, the lost decades of Japan. So the question is, what can Japan do to revive that particular economy and bring back those lost decades back into the perspective of growth? So they have a big event, the 2020 Tokyo Olympics, and they see that as an opportunity for them to grow their economy. So to tie in with this morning's news, the casinos, it's highly unlikely that the casinos could be open by the time 2020 Tokyo Olympics is in the picture. But as you can see, it's just them laying the many plans out there.
Yeah, but how do casinos in themselves revive a economy as large as Japan's?
Oh my God, tourism spend. So it's not just the gaming, right? It's the tourism spend. In Singapore, the two integrated resorts, the gaming resorts in Singapore, have an estimated figure is they've added 1.5 to 2% of GDP. I mean, to their GDP. I mean, that's fantastic, right? It's tourism, it's events, it's what do you call the MICE industry?
Yeah, MICE industry is very closely related to gaming industry. MICE being meetings, incentives, conventions, exhibitions. There's also CAT, which is the casino tourism, and that CAT industry is huge. For instance, Malaysia, we enjoy that kind of industry from the Genting.
But we just have that one. How big is Genting
in the
Malaysian economy?
In the Malaysian economy, it's huge as well.
Well, because gaming is quite largely regulated here. You have to remember, it's not just casinos and gaming. It's all the additional entertainment stuff, the fun parks and theme parks and all that. But what I do find interesting, if you remember, when Macau started their whole gaming casino thing, they stole a huge slice from the US market.
Yeah.
And then the Philippines saw that and they were like, well, we were a slice of this pie too.
So to put it in perspective, right, the Malaysian GDP income, 5% is from the syntax. And syntax encompasses gaming, tobacco and alcohol. Of that 5%, 3% comes from gaming. So think about it this way. How many Malaysians smoke and drink? We tax each and every single one of that, right? And yet, gaming is twice or thrice more than that.
Well, you know, because it comes with, I think, issues like addiction. So the people who have...
So does sugar.
Yeah. Well, okay, so the detractors of the gaming legalization, the casino legalization in Japan, they say that, look, they're really worried about the gaming. Apparently, 3 in 5 Japanese oppose the idea because of issues around of gaming addiction.
But of course, there's, Japan's always had, say, like boat races. And I know that the Nippon Foundation, for instance, gets a lot of its money as a foundation from, you know, the gaming industry, right? I mean, it's boat races as opposed to casinos.
I don't know whether you've ever been to Japan, but, you know, pachinko is huge there. They've got huge stores of this kind of pinball and it's loud. And
but
it's
is like, it gambling?
It is. It's essentially a bit of a kind of a gaming version of pinball, I assume.
Okay. Well, we'll be back with more top business news after this at BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.